U.S. Grains Council economist Mike Dwyer joins us. It looks like the numbers are showing a few positive things, even in this down economy and concern about trade and tariffs. Is that true?
Well, believe it or not, it is true. The narrative has not been good. No doubt about it. The headlines have been kind of scary. Tariff, counter tariff, just escalating tariffs. But at the end of the day, if you look at how we're doing, we are on a pace right now to set an all-time record for ethanol itself, as well as what we call grain in all forms, which is either the direct exports of corn, barley, and sorghum, or the grain equivalent of meat that's exported. Like when we export beef, pork, and poultry, there was corn that was used to feed the animals out before slaughter. So we convert tons of meat into the equivalent tons of corn equivalent. Well, do that with ethanol, the same thing, how much corn goes into a gallon of ethanol and DDGs. And what you come up with this year is we will probably set a record of at least 116 million tons of grain in all forms, feed grains in all forms, which represents one out of every three rows of grain planted is actually going into a foreign consumer's mouth in one form or another. I think it's a mistake to only look at commodity corn exports as the judge of how the sector's doing, since our customers are increasingly choosing to buy our value-added products, such as meat and ethanol.
So the important thing here is to do the math and figure out where that grain is going and get a better picture.
That's right. And when you do that, what you see is a different set of facts than what you see in the headlines. First off, Mexico and Canada. I know there's a lot of concern out in rural America. I just come back from it myself. This is our largest market for grains in all forms. But believe it or not, we're going to set a record there as well. High visibility purchases by the Mexicans of Brazilian corn make great headlines. The reality is it's just a fly on an elephant's back, and that the supply chain between the United States and Canada and the United States and Mexico are so firmly established that the natural economics are going to compel them to buy American. Don't say they're not mad at us, okay? The whole thing, the way the NAFTA renegotiation has gone down, has caused a lot of anxiety in our customers, on our customers' parts. But they're not stopping their purchases. And when you add all these numbers up at the end of the day, things are looking pretty good for U.S. farmers overseas.
Now, you touched on ethanol. That seems to be the big success story right now.
It is. I mean, it's up 22% in the first 10 months. Well, heck, last year was a record. This year is going to be a much bigger record than last year. And we're selling, as our number one market is to Brazil, which is our top competitor in the world, but they're buying over 500 million gallons of U.S. ethanol. That is equivalent to about seven plants' annual output.
Why is that?
Ethanol plants in the, well, they just can't get enough of it. Their demand for ethanol has gone up a lot in the last year. As the price of oil went up, more and more Brazilian consumers are putting E100 in their cars. No gasoline at all. And when that happens, the overall demand for ethanol is more than Brazil can handle. They import from the United States, and even with 20% duties, our product is competitive against Brazilian product in Brazil. I mean, it's a classic Coles to Newcastle sort of development, but it's one that we're excited about, and we think it's long-lasting. It is not a flash-in-the-pan, one-year sort of thing.
So we look at this as a long-term gain, really, then.
Yeah, this is just the first of many gains that I think we'll see over the next five-plus years. The reality is the world is, incomes are going up, there's more and more people. As long as we stay competitive, and that is a key point right there, as long as we're competitive with the other exporters of corn and ethanol and meat, we will continue to see the same kind of performance in future years as we have this year. One of the reasons I'm excited about ethanol is that it is a story that's just getting started. Most countries that we've engaged have no idea why they would want to use ethanol, what benefits could they get from it, and when you do describe it, and then you tell them how cheap it is, I mean, we're about 20% cheaper than our closest competitor. This is a story that almost sells itself. They're a little scared, you know, they never used ethanol before, but they're open to trying something that will save their consumers money, clean up their dirty air, and remediate some of the GHG emissions so they can comply with their Paris Agreement commitments.
When you look at the ethanol exports, Can that possibly make up for lost demand from the petroleum industry not blending fuel here in the U.S. as part of the RFS?
It really shouldn't have to. The RFA and Growth Energy have opined extensively on this. This basically is not what the RFS had in mind for small refiner exemptions. It's probably being abused by many of the people who are asking for the exemption. I'm saying if we could get the RFS to be followed to the letter and have these ethanol exports light up the scoreboard, which is what we're seeing right now, this really bodes well for U.S. ethanol producers and the corn farmers that supply the inputs to that process.
Are the other grains making a significant contribution to this, grains in all forms, or is it primarily corn?
It's primarily corn. And when we say grain, here at the U.S. Grains Council, what we're really talking about is feed grains in all forms. It's not wheat and it's not rice. No soybeans are in there. This is largely corn, sorghum, and barley, and the co-products made from that, like ethanol, meat, and the like. Corn, by far, is the number one category, but we haven't seen a lot of growth in the last 20 years in the corn export number. Most of the growth has been in value-added products that use corn as an input, such as meat and ethanol and DDGs. So, no, it's a little different.
And looking at one of your charts, it looks like corn, just as corn and grain, is down a little bit, but the overall picture, like you say, with the grains in all forms, is where you're getting it back.
I think we're going to see an improvement on that corn number in the next 2 months. USDA has a forecast of about 61 million tons. That's actually up almost 5% from last year. So what they're expecting is in the next 2 months, we should have particularly strong exports of corn based on outstanding sales that we already know have been made and just haven't shipped yet. So I think this good news will at least continue for the next 2 or 3 months. I'm optimistic it'll go well beyond there, but I think marketing year 2017-2018 will go down as a watershed year for our industry.
What should farmers view when they see this news, they see this information? Is this a long-term good thing, or do they still have to be very worried about where we're going in trade policy?
I think you always have to be worried where you're going in trade policy. It makes a big difference. I'm just saying don't confuse headlines for what's actually happening on the buy and sell side. The reality is people need food, they need feed, they need meat, they need good fuel that will help clean up their dirty air. As long as we can stay competitive, I think what you're seeing is this is not some kind of isolated incident. Corn exports, I don't expect a lot out of corn exports over the next 10 years in terms of growth, but I do think you're going to see quite a bit of growth in beef, pork, and poultry, and particularly strong exports of ethanol as the Grains Council's market development program continues to gain traction in places like China. I mean, my God, if you were to look at the situation between U.S. and China, you would think we're not even talking to one another. That couldn't be further from the truth. I just got back from Des Moines, Iowa, where a team of close to 15 NEA officials, NEA stands for the National Energy Administration, they're the ones that are writing the rules of the road on the new nationwide E10 in China. They want to know how we did what we did. So the collaboration continues. I think good work is being done right now. We head to Beijing in a month, and we will educate even a broader cross-section of Chinese policymakers there. Our number one objective is to make sure that E10 mandate gets fulfilled and is enforced. As one of the biggest shortcomings in the world of ethanol is a lot of countries have grand plans and no enforcement mechanism. That's not what has happened here in the U.S. We have an enforcement mechanism, so does Brazil, so does the EU, so does Canada. A lot of the developing countries do not, and it's why they have been failures at their ethanol efforts. What the Chinese says is two countries that we can model our behavior after, which is the U.S. and Brazil. You guys are 80% of the world ethanol market. We care the way you did it. We want to learn from you. And if you take that to its logical conclusions, Larry, what we're doing in China now is just the beginning. I think China is eventually, over probably the next 2 to 3 years, going to become our number one export market. This trade tension hopefully will subside. It has to subside, actually. If it does, I think you can look to China being our next big ethanol market.
You say to do this, we need to remain competitive. Does that mean that our prices have to stay low where they are now?
It means it has to be competitive against the price of our competitors. They don't have to stay low. I mean, it'd be nice to see prices strengthen a little bit, but we don't have the freedom to set our prices where we want. If we can't stay competitive with what Brazil, Argentina, the Black Sea exporters are charging, we're going to be the supplier of last resort, and nobody wants to be in that situation. No, our prices are competitive right now. One of the reasons why we expect the next 2 months to be unseasonably strong is because the Brazilians don't have the product. And they basically, what they don't ship out, we get to ship out in lieu of them. And so far, while it may not be going to China, it's going to many of the other countries.
Is there anything you'd like to add today?
No, I mean, it's just the sense that, you know, when things seem so bad, sometimes a reality check is helpful. The U.S. Grains Council maintains a grain in all form portal on its main page. It allows your listeners to basically track what we're doing all throughout the year and to every country, very easy. And when you do that, you see a very different picture emerging than what's on the front page of the headlines. Our exports continue to grow. The importance of the foreign market to U.S. producers cannot be overstated. If you have 1 in 3 of your rows being exported in one form or another, and the demand overseas is growing much faster than the domestic demand, you can't help but be somewhat encouraged about what the future holds for our industry.
So maybe the lesson for the farmers that have been doing things the same way for many, many years is to look at grain in all forms, not just grain in the bin.
That's right. That's right.